So I just celebrated 2 years earlier this month, and I don't know, I couldn't have done it without you guys, that's for sure. I'm really grateful to have an opportunity to pick up 2 years sober, and I know I couldn't have done it without you and without God. My speaker tonight is a friend of mine. We've been friends for about 6 or 7 years, and I met Ryan when I was like 15, and I think he was like 21, 22, and I don't know, we became pretty good friends, and over a couple of years, I developed a serious resentment at Tampa Young People's Group and everybody in it, including Ryan. And I can remember deleting everybody's number in AA out of my cell phone after I relapsed. And I just decided to keep Ryan's number because I was going to kill him one day. I didn't know when, but one day it was going to happen. And what's crazy about that is that when I had no one to call, because I didn't know anybody in AA anymore, Ryan's number was still on my phone, and I called him, and I think he knew I wanted to kill him, but he still told me that he would meet me at a meeting, and that he'd meet me at a meeting every night if I needed him to, and I'm really grateful for that. Definitely helped me out a lot. So with that, I'll give you Ryan.
My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. My sobriety date's November 24th, 2002. This is my home group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. Thanks, Billy. I was thinking about it when he asked me to speak. Like he said, we've known each other for like 6 or 7 years, so there's all kinds of funny stuff that we've done. You know, and it's just like, it's pretty amazing because Alcoholics Anonymous gives me those relationships. You know, I'm unable to do them on my own, but just like, funny, like when we were new the first time, I don't know if any of y'all know this, but Billy knows how to dance. And he's a break dancer, and I don't know how to dance at all. I don't like it. You know what I mean? I'm the guy that dances almost 7 years sober. I'm standing on the sideline looking, you know, I'm not cool with it, but I wanted to learn. So Billy would move all the furniture in my sponsor's house, and Billy would teach me to break dance in my sponsor's house. And, you know what I mean? It's just like, I was horrible. So he made me go to Rebo's with him and try and do it there. You know, and it's just, and I got served by some like 4-year-old guy. You know what I mean? So, and then one night we had in our mind that we were just going to do something fun, so we went and tagged a wall somewhere in the area. I won't say where, but you know what I mean? We're like a year sober, and we're graffitiing bridges, you know? So not all of it was spiritual healing and greatness, but you know, it is a relationship, and I do owe a lot to people like Billy, you know, that I've had the opportunity to sponsor and help and just be friends with, you know, and it's really an amazing thing. But you know, quickly, growing up, I was just an odd kid. I was a crier. You know, I liked imaginary friends more. I liked my real friends just because they were easier to hang with, you know. And what happened was, is when I was 3 years old, I fractured my skull, and I had to wear a helmet for a year. And it's not cool, you know. So I tried to put stickers on to make it cool, but that wasn't happening either. So I went to preschool, and I was getting made fun of there, you know. And my parents worked, so that's where I went. And so I was just odd. You know, I had this big scar on my head, and I always had my hair cut short. So, you know, just that constant telling them the story of the scar on the side of my head, you know. And so I felt a little off there. And then when I went to go to kindergarten, my parents asked me where I wanted to go, and I had a friend that lived next door, and he's like my big brother. I wanted to be like him, and so I wanted to go where Reno goes. And so I went where Reno goes. It's a Catholic school, you know. I went there for 8 years, and I was the only Jewish kid there, you know. So it was like just different, felt odd, you know. And but the deal is, I have a problem with perception. You know, my perception is off, because for 7 years I was like a martyr at this school of being the only Jewish kid there. And then when another Jewish kid came to school with me, it wasn't like I befriended him or anything. I made fun of him. You know, I made fun of him because he hadn't been through what I'd been through. You know what I mean? So I like strived on this like terminal uniqueness where I'm different than y'all. Because what it did is it somewhat, you know, calmed me a little bit inside. But what really happened is I went to Miami when I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I have a cousin down there, and I wanted to be just like him too. And the deal is, I by any length of the imagination at that point would do whatever I can to fit in. And my cousin Michael, he could break dance also, so that's a running theme in my story, I guess. And he had a girlfriend there, and he could skateboard, and he was about 13, and I was about 7, so I just looked up to him, you know. And his dad had a keg in the garage, and so I, you know, he went and drank from it, so I did the same thing. And I don't know, like, I wouldn't know what was in it. I didn't know what it would do to me. I knew I wasn't supposed to do it, and that attracted me to it also. But what happened is I was like, oh, it tastes bad. And I don't know why, but I was laying down with the spigot or the tap in my mouth. And so I stood up, and I remember, you know what I mean? And I didn't know what it was, but I knew when I read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that what had happened is that it hit me on the inside, and the effects started to kick in. And what happened is I stood up, and I just no longer cared about anything, what y'all thought about me, or me being different, or terminally unique, or any of that stuff. I just didn't care. You know what I mean? It didn't make me an 8-year-old. It didn't make me taller. It didn't make me anything besides the fact that I just didn't care anymore what you thought about me. And I also remember thinking right after that, if I stop drinking this right now, it's going to go away. You know, what I found out after is a phenomenon of craving. I didn't know that at the time. But what happened is when I'm 6 years old, and I start doing this, I do it a few times, and I'm blacked out. You know, and I puke on my mom's shoes, and I fall asleep, and I wake up the next morning with a firm resolution and do as much as I can whenever I get a chance to, you know, because I loved it. You know, it did something for me that nothing else had ever done, and it was really amazing. You know, I just remember that feeling when it hits your stomach and it goes out to my fingertips, and I got this giant smile, you know, and it did that to me the last time I drank. You know, the absolute last time I drank, it hit me in the stomach, and it made me not care anymore about what you all thought about me or my problems or anything like that. The problem was all the problems were just coming on each other, you know, at a bad rate. And, you know, so what happened is I just drank whenever I had the chance. You know, I mean, 8 years old, it's hard to get booze. But if my neighbors went away, I'd steal from their liquor cabinet. All my friends would do it too, and then they'd stop and play basketball or watch dirty movies or whatever you do when you're 9 or 10 years old. And I'd still be in the whiskey. You know, I'd still be drinking the whiskey. So, like, if I had one, it was just going to continue to happen. You know, so a young kid, I'm just walking around drunk around my neighborhood. And I loved it. What happened is when I went into high school, I was about 4'10". I weighed about 90 pounds. I was 14 years old, but I looked like I was about 9. So getting booze wasn't easy. You know, I definitely didn't fit in the locker room or anything. People were shaving. I don't shave now, really. You know what I mean? So it's like, this wasn't really, you know what I mean? It was strange. But I remember I wasn't good at, like, I grew up playing basketball, but since I wasn't growing, well, you know what I mean? It wasn't obviously going to be a future of mine. But I remember I went to a party once, and the party was actually at my house, and this guy that went to another high school of mine, big football guy, and I had tequila and a bottle of water, and I was drinking it. And he asked me how to drink. I told him it was tequila. He said, can I try? He took a little sip. He gagged, and he made a face on his own stuff. I just grabbed it back from him, and I put like 3 pulls down on it at once. And he was like, that's amazing. You know, and I found it. I found what I was good at. You know, and so I did that as much as I could. I barely got through high school. In the end, when I got into college, my senior year, I went to a pretty good high school. So my parents thought that helping me, you know what I mean, kind of, they put me in these good schools, it would set me straight, and I wouldn't mess up anymore. But that wasn't really the case. What happened is I didn't like to skip school because I was getting loaded with my friends at school. Awesome. You know, so I went every day. I had really good attendance in high school because it was just like getting loaded in the math room. I mean, I wasn't really in class or anything, but I was at school. But my senior year, I got into a college. As far as I was concerned, I was done. I didn't have anything else to do in college. And it just happened to be like October, like the beginning of October. So I just started drinking, and I drank every day. I'd fill up a water bottle full of vodka, and I'd take it to class with me, and I'd be drunk in 8 o'clock calculus. You know, and just, I loved it. You know, I really did. By the time, if you had asked me, I would have said, I'm going to stop. When I get to college, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to drink like a gentleman. I'm going to do all these things that we're going to do. I'm going to grow up. So what happens is I go to college with all those intents. And I really believe them. I really wanted to do well when I got there. But what happens is I continue to drink. And I'm starting to drink more. And I'm starting to drink, you know. I started drinking every day, so I guess I wouldn't start drinking every day at that point. But I was just drinking. You know what I mean? I was just drinking all the time. I wasn't going to class. I was failing out of college, all this stuff. So after a semester or two, I'm on academic probation. I lost this, like, you know, whatever. I had a little Florida Bright Future Scholarship. I lost that, you know. And in the second semester, I don't show up to a class at all. You know, I fail golf in the process. It's funny. My best friend from kindergarten, I've known him for like 25 years. He's getting married, and he had his bachelor party last weekend. So I was down there, and we were talking about college stuff because he's my roommate in college. He's a normal guy. He said, you remember when I used to come by your house and ask you if you're going to golf class? And you would say yes. And then I told you it was over, you know, for the day. And I was like, yeah, I remember that. He said, man, I was so worried about you at the time. You know, the deal was I just couldn't show up. So I failed golf, which basically means all you have to do is show up with a 12-pack and hit balls at the driving range. I would have gotten a B, you know. But I couldn't do that. So what happened is I ended up coming back down to Tampa. And I moved in a little house on Davis Island. and I didn't have a sober breath in a while. You know, I hadn't really since I was a senior in high school. I'd had one like 4-day period where I was smoking some pot, thinking that was enough. You know, and I went 4 days without drinking. And I thought that was good enough. You know, I wasn't an alcoholic, that's for sure. You know, alcoholics don't go 4 days, and that was in like 2000, and I got sober in 2002. So that was like my 4-day period between the end of 1998 to 2002 that I wasn't drinking. But it's just like I didn't know that I'd lost all control, and I didn't have the ability to say no or stop when I started or not do it when I didn't want to. I didn't know any of that. And to start to find that, I moved into Davis Island. And I got this job in this pizza place because my parents told me I had to work. So I went and got a job at a pizza place on Davis Island that has a bar attached to it that paid me in cash and sometimes other stuff. And I would reinvest all of that cash that they paid me at the bar that evening. And I lived in a little place right behind the 7-Eleven. So I'd make that 2:55 run to the 7-Eleven to get beer right before it closed. And at the end, I had to make that beer last me or whatever I had to drink until 7 o'clock the next morning when they started selling again. So I'm just drinking like that. I'm drinking on a regular basis. I'm delivering pizza, which is, you know, it's a good job. But what happened is I would get up at 3 for my 4 o'clock pizza delivery job, and I'd get a 12-pack at the 7-Eleven, and I'd put it on ice. And I'd gotten a little TV that you could plug in your cigarette lighter so I could watch football. That was my reasoning. So I was drinking and driving, delivering pizza, and watching TV. You know, it's just self-centered to say the least, but dangerous to anybody that I came in contact with. And I'm just blacking out. I black out every night. I throw up every night. I'm making myself throw up because I feel so bad and all that stuff. I'm throwing up blood, and I'm waking up in my front yard in August in Florida, and that's uncomfortable. You know, my neighbors are looking at me, and I got sand in my mouth. I'm dehydrated. I'm like sweating booze out of me, and I'm just worried about when I get the next drink. You know, and that was a little weird when my parents were like staring at me. I'm, you know, laid out in my front yard face first, but, you know, it's just bad. Little by little, it just continued to get worse. I'm having these blackouts, and I'm wrecking my car in blackouts, and I'm blaming on other people doing the same thing to me. You know, it's just little by little, my life was just going. You know, and what happened is I ended up going to rehab. You know, I went to rehab because my parents asked me what was going on, and just one day I finally was able to tell them. I was like, I can't stop drinking. I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, and that was it for me. I remember I was thinking about tonight. I prayed a little bit earlier that month, I think, and I just said whatever I knew how to say, which is, I can't go like this anymore. Just help me with whatever. Either way, I'm coming out black after that point with my gun in my mouth. You know, I'm hoping that I get hit by a truck because it's just, you know what I mean, the pain is so great in my head of what's really going on. And I just couldn't, you know what I mean, I couldn't make it. So what happened is I go to this rehab and I get in there and, you know, rehab's rehab. I wore sweatpants every day for 30 days. They gave me 3 meals a day and the food was pretty good. And, you know what I mean, they took me AA meetings at night. And I remember Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember walking in these meetings and being like, wow, these people know what I'm talking about. You know, and I was able to be honest with some people in these meetings and tell them what was really going on. And a gentleman came in, he was a younger guy, and he had a meeting at the place I was at on a Friday night when they didn't take us, or Saturday night when they didn't take us out. And I remember really relating to him. And I was like, if he can make it in Alcoholics Anonymous, so can I. You know, but what happens for me is I can't show up. You know, I can't show up for my family or my friends or Alcoholics Anonymous or anything like that. So what happens is I get out of rehab and I'm just done. You know, and I go back, I'm living with my folks, and they hate me. You know what I mean? So I'm a dry drunk. My stepmom told me I need to get a sponsor. She'd never even seen AA until I was 5 years sober. You know, she knew I needed to get a sponsor. You know, and it's just all this stuff. I'm just a taker, and I'm just living on their couch and not going to AA. And what had happened is one of my one of the guys I got sober with in that rehab place, he ended up, he told me he was a drug addict. He was an alcoholic. He could drink wine safely with his girlfriend and all that stuff. And I didn't know. I was 30 days sober, and I never really, I know I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't, I saw a big book. I had one. I read the family afterward to see how my family was supposed to treat me when I got out of rehab. You know what I mean? That's self-centeredness right there. You know what I mean? I don't have to worry about what I got to do. I got to worry about what y'all are going to do for me when I get out of here. But this guy was a drug addict, and he was an alcoholic. And he had a glass of wine with his girlfriend that night, and I was at an aftercare session, and they started shooting up and doing whatever, and he died. And then the next morning, I remember I got a call from my buddy at 11:30, and he told me, hey, man, we lost Mike. And I was just like, you know, I mean, I didn't know. I never dealt with death of anybody. And so I just, only thing that came into my head is said, go to AA. Go to AA, because I knew I was going to drink. I knew I was next. We had talked about it. If we drank, it was just done, you know. And so what happened is I went to a new meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in this meeting, I waited till the end, and I shared, and I said, you know, I mean, I'm going to drink. My friend died last night. I don't know what to do. I need help. And this is God working in my life. For a long time, I didn't know what it was. I just thought it was some sort of weird coincidence of another way that I got here. But what happened was, is I was in this meeting, and after the meeting, nobody came up and said hi to me. And I'd been in meetings in rehab. I knew people were supposed to come and offer me rides and do a lot of good stuff for me, because I'm new, you know, and I'm self-centered, so it's supposed to happen for sure. But what had happened is this girl came up, and she said, you know, I'm Emory. I've been sober 6 months, and, you know, I got a good young people's group. You should come with me. And I remember thinking, you're in love with me. This is awesome. You know what I mean? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like, and really the deal was I was bloated from the drinking. I said weird stuff. I was really quiet, and I just, like, out and shout something. You know what I mean? It's just, like, kind of strange, you know? And so I don't know where I got love, but what it was is she was working the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous. And the, what she did that was different was she didn't give me a little list with her number on it, you know, for me to call. And I do that for people, and I'm always impressed when people call me. I really am, because I wasn't going to do it. I had so many of those in my trunk from, like, the few meetings I was going to here, and they'd always give me one, and I'd always put it in my trunk. And she got my number, and she called me out Wednesday night and said, hey, the meeting's tomorrow night, you should be there. And I'm like, she loves me, really, you know? Like, I'm definitely going, you know? And so I show up to this meeting, and it's in the church over there, and what happened was I met some people that did things a little bit differently in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank God for it, because it saved my life, you know? And I came here for the pretty girls, I'm not going to lie. There's, like, 4 pretty girls in that meeting, and I hadn't talked to a pretty girl in a long time. You know, when I was drinking, I would get a date, and it wouldn't make it through dinner, you know, because I'd be drunk and hammered and acting like a crazy person, and they would just go to the bathroom. You know what I mean? The day would be over. I'd never see them again. So, I mean, when these pretty girls were talking to me at the meeting, I'm loving it. And but the other thing that happened was these 4 guys would come up to me, and they'd ask me things like, do you have a sponsor? You know what I mean? Where are you at in the steps? Let me get your phone number. And they called me the next night, and they said, what are you doing? I said, I was, you know, go to a meeting. They're like, all right, cool, where do you live? And they came and picked me up and all that. And the next night, they called me again and said, hey, what are you doing tonight? And I said, I'm planning to call it a night. You know, man, I went to 2 meetings in a row. It's pretty hard. You know what I mean? I want to overdo this thing. And they said, okay, cool, we're out front. Come on out, you know? And I started to just roll with those guys. And it was funny because, you know what I mean, I was so impressionable at the time, but I fell in with a group of guys that really believed in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they really believed in the traditions, and they really believed in a group concept. You know, they didn't really care about my feelings about anything like that. And they didn't, you know, I mean, I was the guy that was kind of weird. Like, I tell them I was going to hang out after the meeting, and I just, like, disappear. You know, and then they call me the next day, like, hey, what happened to you last night? Like, oh, I had to do chores for my dad, and, you know what I mean, just make something up, and you really come out, like, ironing laundry or something in the middle of the night, you know, that I had told them I had to do. And but they just kept inviting me back, you know, and kept allowing me to come to these meetings, and like I said, I got a sponsor, and I didn't work these steps by any kind of, like, goodness of my own heart or really desire to get better. You know, really what happened is I got a sponsor because my, like, guy told me that I'd get a date if I did service. You know what I mean? So I'm picking up all kinds of chairs after the meeting, you know, and I'm just making sure everybody sees me and all this stuff. But I started to make friends with the other setup person, you know, and I started to, like, have roots in this meeting. And I got my sponsor, and he had another guy that we've been sober. He's been sober 2 weeks longer than me. And he was doing his fifth step. And I didn't want him to get, like, really far ahead of me in the fifth step game, you know, or whatever the steps game. I had to make sure I was pretty close to vying for number one pigeon at all times. And so it's, you know, just ego and self-centeredness again. But I did a fifth step. You know what I mean? I did an honest fifth step. And I got to tell you, I was 100 days sober about that when I did that. And every night I dreamed about drinking. Every night. You know, I'd wake up standing in my bed sweating like I just kicked my wall. You know, and normal people don't drink like that. You know what I mean? But I'm standing in my bed like that. And I would just get these compulsions where I knew I was going to drink any second. If I didn't, I was going to explode. You know, I get those. I had those every day. And every day. And then I did a fifth step. And they talked about meetings, like all this great stuff that happens when you do your fifth step. And what happened for me was nothing came open to me. You know, God didn't reveal himself to me that night or anything like that. But what happened was, it's about 3 or 4 months later, I thought back, and I hadn't had a dream about booze since then. You know, I mean, the compulsion subsided. You know, I had thoughts of drinking some alcoholic. It happens. But that compulsion where I felt like I was going to drink it any second was gone. You know, around that time I met Billy. You know, me and Dave kidnapped him from the lunch bunch over in St. Pete. We asked him to come over, and we said, well, we'll just crash on the couch. Or Dave said, why don't you just crash on the couch and, you know, hang out for the night, and I'll take you back in the morning. And so from that, Billy moved in, and he's a fixture in our home group. You know, so he's living in the laundry room, and like I said, we're tagging bridges, and we're break dancing, and, you know what I mean, and doing all this stuff, just having a good time here. And that was another thing that was really good, is they made this fun. You know what I mean? They made this fun with the same idea of sit down and shut up, Ryan. You know what I mean? Like, but we still had a good time after the meeting. But the meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous was the most important. But we just started hanging out together. And my experience here is this. I fell in with those group of guys, and those group of guys ended up moving. And they moved back to Tampa. And at the time, our group was kind of small. You know, there wasn't a lot going on. And I wasn't doing much at all. I met a girl, and I got a good job, and I fell in love. You know what I mean? We've been dating for a week or two at that point, so I was, you know what I mean? I was doing well, and then she drank and left me, you know, and I was done because I didn't have a program. And I thought it was just that the girl left me or whatever, but it wasn't. The deal was that I had no program at all in my life, and I was just dying. I was dying of untreated alcoholism at like almost 2 years, or I was over 2 years sober at that point. And my sponsor had moved, and my friend Jaime had moved, and it just wasn't much going on in my life. And so what happened is we ended up doing a lot of service work. We were bidding for a conference or something like that, and you're just trying to get involved here and trying to be a part of this, part of AA in the area. And we started to do that, and people started to stay sober, and you know, we ended up having like a good time here. And again, I got to sponsor people, you know, and really for me that was a pretty amazing deal, getting to sponsor people, because I didn't, you know, for me it was like taking from my sponsor. Like, he just would give me these like nuggets of wisdom, and I'd follow him around and hang out, you know, and all that stuff, but I didn't really do anything. But then when somebody asked me to sponsor him, I saw what that was all about. I remember, you know, just like having to finally give for the sake of giving, and not to do it for anything in return, because I was picking up new guys at one point, this time when I was about 2 years sober, and I was crazy, and I wanted to drink all the time, and I was, you know, all the conflict suicide on a regular basis, which is always merry, you know, and so I just got that going on. And I remember like picking up new guys and for the purpose of getting relief out of it, and it stopped happening. I didn't get any relief from picking up new guys, and I asked somebody about it, and they said, well, get it for free and for fun, you know, you got to do it for no respect of reward and return. And I remember thinking, like, that's retarded. You know what I mean? Like, I've always picked up guys that feel better, but it wasn't working anymore. And so it really started to be just like an idea of giving, just to try and give. And I'm not perfect at it by any means, you know, but I try and sit in a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous through it, you know, and just to listen. You know, that's the hardest part for me to listen, because I'm not going to lie to you, I love doing this stuff. You know what I mean? I'm self-centered, I got an ego, speaking's great. You know, I really like it. I probably think I'm a lot better at it than I really am. You know what I mean? All that stuff, because I'm out of control with my ego. But, you know, the fact is I get so much more out of one-on-one time with guys like Billy. You know, I get so much more out of taking a meeting to a detox or a rehab or something like that. I get so much more from watching people go from hating it here, absolutely hating Alcoholics Anonymous, the fire lighting in their eyes and being like, this place saved my life. You know, I've seen so many times that happening here. It's, you know, I mean, it's not even fair to watch it. You know what I mean? Because I get so much more of that when I'm not expecting it than I do when I'm trying to get it. You know, and it's really amazing to watch. And this group's great, but I can't thank the people enough that came before me that believed in all those things, that believed in the group concept, that believed in, you know, sponsorship and the steps and the traditions and all that stuff, and that this is bigger than me. You know, I mean, this is absolutely bigger than me. This, you know, I mean, this would go on without me very easily. You know, I mean, but I couldn't go on without this. You know, I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous is I try and keep it the most important thing in my life, and I'm not perfect at it either. But, you know, the more I say yes, the better off I am. And then every once in a while, I got to try and give for the sake of giving. You know what I mean? It's not just a matter of not saying no sometimes. You know what I mean? And I say that facetiously. It really is a matter of me going out and shaking hands with people. You know what I mean? So I got to find somebody's name and talk to them on a regular basis. I got to call them when I don't want to call them and stuff like that. And I don't mean like I got to, because that's not really the case. It really, in the end, that helps me more. You know, that's the stuff that there's no, I can't, you know, quantify the reward that I get from that stuff. You know, but little by little, I came back with my family, and I started to, you know, just to be a person here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been a great journey. And you know, a little thing at the end is when I was a year sober, when I was drinking still, my parents told me they were going to adopt a little girl from China, and I didn't have any siblings, so I was like, oh, it's cool. You know what I mean? I'm drunk. You know, like, it's pretty awesome. You know, I'm fat, and you know what I mean? Like, I got nothing going for me. I'm failed out of college again. And then when they went and got her in China, I was a year sober when they came back. And I remember holding her in my arms that first night. My parents looked at me and said, you ever drink again, don't come back here. You know what I mean? Like, you're horrible, and she's perfect. You know, so you're not welcome out here for drinking. But if you're not drinking, you can come get dinner once a week type deal. You know, and so it's like, but little by little, I didn't have any of that in me. I'm not a big brother by nature. You know what I mean? I can't do that. You know, because it's a giving relationship, especially when I'm 20, you know, whatever, 28 years old, and she's 7 right now. You know what I mean? We do the same jigsaw puzzle every week when I go see her. You know what I mean? It gets kind of boring. I know the jigsaw, if I could do it upside down, you know, but she loves it. You know what I mean? She just learned to ride her bike, so she loves riding her bike with me. And I don't want to ride a bike. I've had a long week. You know what I mean? But, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to show up for people. How to just say, not say no, just to keep doing what they want to do. You know, and you know, she's awesome. You know, and the funny thing is I was about 3 years sober. They told me, if anything ever happened to them, she was going to my stepmom's friend, some lady she knew or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I was really trusted in the family. And so a couple years later, I started doing this deal with my sponsor and then helping people. And they just in passing one night at dinner said, hey, you know, if anything happens to us when we're gone this weekend, Haley, you're the legal guardian. And I was like, You know, I mean, of course, they threw in Adam, my cousin, is the, in charge of all of our money, because I, you know, we probably spend all that. And they threw both of those in there, which is how my family works. But, yeah, I had to, like, go outside because I was crying. And they just were, like, going back around and finishing. You know what I mean? The finishing dinner was, like, no big deal to them at all. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. You know what I mean? The fact is when I got here, they told me, don't come back here if you're drinking. You know what I mean? But now it's no big deal to them to say, hey, you're a legal guardian. And they just say it in passing. It's a pretty amazing thing, you know. And I owe that all to you guys here. You know, I owe all of that to y'all. And I don't want to get too big to forget that. I mean, I really just want to be able to sit here. And the only requirement they told me was a desire to stop drinking. I had to give this thing away, you know. And all I got to do now is just keep continuing to do that. And if I continue to do that, I know I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I want to thank Billy again for asking me to speak. I love you, man. Thank you.